First, I'm going to talk about the control test, and then I'll address the separate or permitted to work test in a few minutes. Under the control test stated in the wage order, time is compensable if the employee is subject to an employer's control. The plain language of the wage order does not ask what happened before the control time. It does not ask why the employer chose to control the time.
There is at least a case from this court and an intermediate appellate case in California that suggests that the requirement should be read into the wage order. That is, if it's entirely voluntary, then the wage order doesn't apply. And I guess my question is whether there is doubt that the California Supreme Court would follow the lead of our court, which they theoretically don't care about at all, and the intermediate court to read in that sort of a requirement.
There certainly is a significant doubt about that, Your Honor. The wage order's plain text does not support that as an essential determinative requirement that trumps all other evidence of control. The wage order says the time must be controlled. Now, we know that's broader than simply required time, because 70 years ago, the wage order was amended. It used to say that time was compensable if the employee is required to be on duty or required to be on the employer's premises. The IWC changed that language in 1947, and now the wage order simply states, is the time controlled?
Is there another California Supreme Court case besides Corralon, if I'm pronouncing that right, that we should consider, or is that really the case so far?
Really, it is the main case that addresses the control test, but other Supreme Court cases, including Mendiola and Martinez, have recognized that the reason for the 1947 amendment that's so critical here is that the IWC wanted to expand and broaden the definition of compensable time. The IWC wanted to make sure that California law was broader than federal law. So I think that the reason there's doubt about whether the California Supreme Court would follow this court's decision in Alcantar is, number one, none of the cases so far have addressed these particular facts.
Well, there's also a question, I suppose, even if they were to follow it, where to draw the line between voluntary and not voluntary.
Well, let me suggest this, Your Honor. If you look at the facts of the three main cases we have, Marillion, Alcantar, and Overton, in those cases, either the employer didn't require anything at all, or the court found that the time was both required and controlled. And one of the reasons they found that was that the plaintiffs in those cases didn't make the argument that we're making. They didn't point out the change, the critical change in the wage order language 70 years ago. So the courts had no occasion to directly address the legal point that we're making now. And I would suggest that if the facts in those cases had been slightly different, there would have been a different outcome. So, for example,
was the suffered or permitted to work language also done at that same time, added at the same time?
That language was in the wage order before, and that portion of it was not revised in 1947, but the control test portion was revised. So prior to the revision, the wage order did say that time is compensable if a person is suffered or permitted to work, whether or not required to do so. That portion was unchanged. But there was a critical and substantive change to the definition of the control test. So, and if I can address Marillion and Overton.
I just ask counsel, are you satisfied that the record in this case is fully developed in terms of the facts for a reviewing court to consider in light of the definition of the class that was agreed to by counsel before the court certified the class?
Well, I think the record is well developed as far as the definition of the class is concerned. I think one area where the trial court, the district court, went astray relates to the suffered or permitted to work test, where the court found that the activity was supposedly passive, which we think contradicts the record, and at a minimum, there are tribal issues on that point, and that would be something that could required to take the shuttle. And during the shuttle ride, you'll be required to sew costumes for our informers. And not only that, but there will be a supervisor standing over you to make sure that you do it correctly. And you won't be allowed to leave the bus until the supervisor is satisfied that you've done it correctly. And you can be disciplined for not doing it. Those facts, you know,
generally would be suffering or permitted to work. I mean, I think you're jumping to the other clause.
I don't intend to, Your Honor, and here's why. Judge Alsup erroneously, in my view, held that to be compensable under the suffered or permitted to work test, the activity has to relate to the employee's primary job responsibilities in the hypothetical that I mentioned. Sewing costumes is not part of the plaintiff's job responsibilities. It would be.
Is there some language in the statute that says that? I mean, I'm not sure why that would be. It seems like if you're suffering or permitted to work at some task that helps the employer fulfill its mission, then that's working.
I agree. And I'm saying that Judge Alsup erred in holding.
But we're not bound by that aspect.
You are not. My only point is that under Judge Alsup's order, it's erroneous in numerous respects, and the result of it would be that time spent doing tasks like this wouldn't be compensable.
Well, I don't think one has to go that far, at least on the control piece. I have the same issue, I think, as Judge Friedland in trying to sort of cleanly separate out the control test. Because from my point of view, that is the murkier part of the case. And I guess I wanted to just confirm that the only relief you're seeking from us is a certification to the California Supreme Court. Is that true?
That's one option. Or an option.
I thought that was what the opening brief asked us to do.
We did ask for that. But
if you are asking us to do that, what is the question that you would ask us to certify to the California Supreme Court?
The question would be whether the control test includes an additional unstated element of required, which is what the district court held. That would be the question on the control test, and then on the separate permitted to work test, the question would be what is the definition of work under California law?
Or I guess it could be stated more broadly, but I guess the reason I'm asking is that if the bottom line is that you would like the California Supreme Court to answer this question, then really the only issue for us is whether there is uncertainty about California law. And we wouldn't have to decide as beyond saying it seems uncertain. And it seems like you're trying to go all the way to proving that you're right and they're wrong rather than saying it's up for grabs.
They are.
Those are very different things.
They are different things, but I am arguing both of those things in the alternative. And if the court decides that it doesn't want to certify the questions to the Supreme Court, then of course you would reach the merits of these issues, and I'm certainly arguing that we're right on the merits. I believe we're correct that the wage order does not say required. And also the cases that were relied on by the district court are distinguishable because they relate to commute time, which is a very different issue than non-commute time, which is what we have in this
just
case.
Just on premises. They can't leave the premises on pain of being fired, basically.
That is correct, because their actions are being physically, they're under the immediate physical supervision of a manager.
So say we agreed with you that California law was uncertain and that it would be very helpful for the California Supreme Court to resolve this question as you just phrased it. I'm actually struggling with whether this case is a good vehicle for them to answer that question in light of the way the class was defined to exclude people who, as I understand it, have a bag, for example, because they have diabetes and need to have insulin in their bag. It seems like you've excluded from the class people with the best reason to have a bag, and that makes me wonder whether this is actually a good case to go to the California Supreme Court to answer this question.
That issue would be for a future case. In this case, the reason we didn't object to that, suggested by the judge, trial judge, was that under the law, it doesn't matter. The wage order doesn't ask.
That's exactly your point. So you're asking, you would like the California Supreme Court to answer the question, if you are not required to carry a bag, but you choose to do so, and the employer declines to allow you to leave the premises until you've waited in line and been inspected and all of that, is that compensable time? That's the very question you want answered.
That is the question we want answered, and we think that it's the
I'm worried about, like, maybe the California Supreme Court wants to answer the general question of whether employees have to be subjected to bag inspection, but if that's the typical case is employees have multiple reasons. Some of them are doing it just because they want to, and some of them have a real reason they need to. And it seems like the more typical case is a mix of those. And so why shouldn't the California Supreme Court be faced with a case that still has the mix?
Well, Your Honor, this case does squarely present a legal question, which is what does the control test mean under California law? Does the comments and statements of Aurelian and in Alcantar apply only to Kamiya cases or not? The issue of bag checks is one that comes up a lot in
big cases. I noted, I was looking probably unsuccessfully for the mix of cases in the district courts, but it appears that there are a lot of cases percolating on this very issue.
Correct, and that is one of the main reasons why it would be helpful to have a Supreme Court review.
This is why I asked the question, do you feel that this record is fully developed sufficiently to get an answer that would be helpful from the California Supreme
Court? I think it is on the question that we think the case presents, which is what is the definition of the control test, and how are non-commute cases?
So it's non-commute, and it's not required. It's not required from the employee's perspective. That is, it's quote-unquote voluntary on the part of the employee to bring bags or devices to work, although one wonders how common it is. But that's actually the question you want to answer.
It is. That is the question.
And so then what will happen? I mean, you said it'll be the next case that deals with the person with diabetes or something. I mean, do we really need the California Supreme Court to do this twice?
Your Honor, I think the cases with people with diabetes raise issues about the Disabilities Act, other kinds of legal protections that those employees are going to be asserted. This case is the one in which these issues are likely to be clearly presented and not.
And of course, if you need an alternative, if the answer is that it doesn't matter whether it's voluntary, then that'll cover everything.
It would. That is correct. Those other cases would never come up because if the court rules the way we think it should, those cases would all be subsumed. I am honest for time. I would like to reserve some time for
you. May do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Julie Dunn, and I represent Apple Inc. in this matter. Your Honors, Apple did not require employees to bring bags or personal Apple technology to work. It provided all of the tools and equipment employees needed to do their jobs.
Sure, but in real life, people bring stuff to work. They bring their iPhones. You want them to have iPhones, I assume. They bring their purse with their comb and their, you know, mirror and their lipstick and all kinds of stuff. That's how normal people act in the workplace.
It's all the personal things that one would normally bring with them would otherwise not be available, correct?
Not correct necessarily, Your Honor. And if you look at the record, this is why the district court was so specific in the class certification hearing to narrow the facts as it did in this case. So if you take a look at the excerpts of record, the various declarations submitted from class members, some said, I never brought a bag. Anything I wanted to bring with me, keys, I carried. Other people said, I only brought a laptop or an iPad because I wanted to watch movies on my breaks. A lot of people did say they brought their iPhones, again, to communicate with family members on breaks. It's for personal use. So if you look at the record, this truly is an optional situation.
Okay, so if the law doesn't care whether it's optional or required, that won't matter, and that's really the question, the legal question in front of us. It is quite clear that if an employee does choose to bring a bag or an Apple product, they are, in the normal parlance, under the control of Apple while they wait in line, if there's a line, while their bag is searched. And then if they don't go through that search, they're subject to discipline. It's a requirement if they've chosen to bring that item. And so I'm not sure how that makes any difference to the legal question, because if required isn't a part of the equation at all legally, then all of that is interesting, but it doesn't matter if they're under the control of the employer during that time.
Your Honor, again, I agree. I think that's why the district court was specific about, at the class certification plaintiffs, are you agreeing to litigate this case on the assumption that A, every class member brought a baby voluntarily, and B, purely for personal convenience?
Okay, so why shouldn't we ask the California Supreme Court to look at that? Because they've never looked at that question. The California Supreme Court has never dealt with the issue of required or not required. And they, as far as I know, they've never dealt with the change in the wage order that the opposing counsel is discussing.
And, Your Honors, with respect to that, I would like to review those decisions that I think established the California Supreme Court and the California Court of Appeal, as well as the Ninth Circuit, has already directly addressed these issues.
So I think that it's quite clear that our court thinks there's a required element, and that one of the intermediate appellate courts in California thinks that with respect to commute time. But neither of those decisions dealt with this type of situation, is it?
So I'd like to start just with a discussion of Berlin. Let's talk about the facts. Let's talk about the ruling that came out of that. Again, Berlin is a transportation situation.
Right.
The employer said, all employees, you have one way to get to the work field. It's going to be on my buses. And that was mandatory. It was required. That was a known fact in that case.
Right, but that doesn't mean that's the only situation. That's the only situation the court had to deal with. They were never asked the question that's in this case.
Two parts to that were really an analysis showed. The employees further claimed that while on the bus, they were foreclosed from a lot of personal activities. They could do some. They could listen to music. They could read. But they couldn't do anything they wanted. If they drove themselves, maybe they run errands on the way. Maybe they drop their kids off at school. So the California Supreme Court definitely said there's a two-part test to this control theory. Number one, they said, we agree it's not suffered or permitted to work because they're riding the buses and they're not doing what they would otherwise do when in the field. They're just passively riding on the bus, so it is not suffered and permitted to work, but is it work under the control test? In our brief, we submitted many, many, many quotes to the court where the California Supreme Court mentioned the required element. I want to focus on two. The first is from page 588 of the decision. There the court said, we emphasize that employers do not risk paying employees for their travel time merely by providing them transportation. Time employees spend traveling on transportation that an employer provides but does not require its employees to use may not be compensable.
They're not deciding it. It may not be compensable. We're not faced with that issue. They're saying, that's how I read that. They're just not deciding that case.
And I understand that you're not requesting that this court certify to the California Supreme Court, but if we were going to, what is the question that you would suggest needs to be certified?
I believe that the California Supreme Court has already established that the control test has two elements. One, that the activity is required, and two, that the employer exercise control, a sufficient amount of control. And again, Your Honors, let's just put it in another context. Let's talk about on-call time.
Excuse me. It would be helpful to all of us, I think, if you could answer Judge Marshall's question, which is, what is the question? If we were to certify a question with the California Supreme Court, how would you suggest that it be phrased?
I apologize. I thought I had answered that. The question would be, is the control test a two-part test, such that the employer has to both require the activity and exercise a sufficient amount of control over the employee during the activity?
Well, here there's no question that there's control. You have to go to a certain place and you're being inspected by management. So that piece of control is clearly there. So really the only question is whether the fact that the condition that process of inspection, the voluntariness of that makes any difference under the wage order.
That's correct. And I would point out that in Marillion, in another location, they said if it's optional, so they stated in the opposite direction. This is page 594. In deciding Royal must compensate plaintiffs for this travel and waiting time, we nonetheless remain optimistic that employers will not be discouraged from providing free transportation as a service to their employees. As we have emphasized throughout, Royal required plaintiffs to ride its buses to get to and from the fields, subjecting them to its control for the hours work definition. However, employers may provide optional free transportation to employees without having to pay them for their travel time, as long as the employers do not require employees to
use. So the analog here would be if Apple didn't require the plaintiffs to stand in line and be inspected, but they would optionally provide the free opportunity to be inspected. I guess I just don't read it the way that you're reading it, or at least I think it's ambiguous. And that concerns me because this is obviously an issue that comes up a lot because there is a lot of other litigation pending raising this same question. And it just seems that it would be prudent to ask the state court to interpret state law. And I don't understand why that's a concern to you if you think they're going to answer it your way.
And then, do you think the record, this record, is fully developed just in terms of the definition of the class that was agreed to before the trial judge to even certify in this case?
I do believe that the record is fully developed. The plaintiffs have agreed to litigate the case on established facts. That is that employees were not required for any reason, not by Apple, not by the nature of the work, not by any life necessity, to bring a bag or personal Apple technology. They did so voluntarily and purely for personal convenience. And so I'd like to return, Judge Graber, to your analog question. I think if we look at the Overton decision, we see where the analog winds up. In the Disney case, Disney did not require employees to drive to work. If they chose to do so, however, there was a requirement. There was control. You must park in the remote lot that's 1 mile away. The employee said, because we have to park in that remote lot, we have to arrive substantially earlier. So we would like to be paid for the time it takes us to get from that remote lot to the park entrance. And the California Court of Appeal, again, applying Marillion in the two-part test that was established there between required and controlled, said you're not entitled to compensation because Disney didn't require you to drive in the first place.
But there is a difference, at least potentially, that there may be other differences, too, that may matter to the California Supreme Court, which has never looked at that question. One is the difference between traveling to and from work and being at work. The other is the difference between the level of control. Because if someone comes from the remote parking lot, if they felt like wandering somewhere else to go pick flowers, they could do that. These folks, once they take the option of bringing a bag to work, they are required to be truly under the control of Apple during that inspection process. And I guess I just feel like we're guessing a lot about what the California Supreme Court might do when we can just ask them.
If the court is inclined to ask the California Supreme Court, I'm not going to stand in the court's way. I'm just explaining that I do feel as though the California Supreme Court and Court of Appeal and the Ninth Circuit have already addressed this issue and confirmed it's a two-part test.
Can I ask you what your response is to the textual, historical issue that counsel has raised about the revision of the wage order from wording that had requirement in it to wording that has only control?
Yes. If you look at the historical context, there's a number of authorities cited in the papers that explain this evolution of the law. but originally they were both on a par with federal law in the concept of suffering and permitting to work in the requirement element. When federal law went to the Portal to Portal Act and said, we're going to exclude certain preliminary and post-preliminary activities from the definition of hours worked, California went in the opposite direction. They said, federal law is getting looser, we're going to get a little bit tighter. And so they didn't just change the word required, they redefined the word entirely. And they did that in 1947. The California Supreme Court decided we're really in 2000. And we're talking 53 years after this language.
Right, but they didn't really address that historical aspect.
I would like to point out, Your Honor, that even when plaintiffs say this change from required to control is means it doesn't have to be required anymore, they provided dictionary definitions of the word control in their brief. And that's from their opening brief. And they say, control is to exercise authority or dominating influence over, direct, regulate. When you're going to require somebody every time you're directing them to do something, you're regulating that they do something, you're dominating them, you're requiring them to do it. So what it said is,
and here what they're required to do is stand in line and get inspected.
That's see if they exercise a choice purely for personal convenience. And this is where the facts that the plaintiffs agreed to litigate the case turn on. Just as in the recent Watterson case that was before the Ninth Circuit about a month ago, the same idea. An employer offers health insurance benefits. Nobody's required to sign up for them. But if you do sign up for those benefits, you're going to have to fill out paperwork. You're going to have to enroll. You're going to have to pick your plan. And then one step further in the Watterson case, if they wanted to reduce their premiums, they would have to participate in the wellness program, which meant they had to submit to health screenings. Now, these are requirements that you have to follow if you make the first choice, and the first choice is optional. And that's what Marillion said. If it's an option to ride on the bus, it doesn't matter that once you choose to get on that bus, you can't drive your kids, you can't run your errands, you're going to be limited in your personal activities because you chose to do that. That was your trade-off. We see the same thing here. Employees know, before they come to work, I've got school after work today. I have a choice. I can leave my backpack full of books at home, or I can take it to work. If I take it to work, I know that it'll be subject to check. I can decide what's more convenient for me. Is it to leave that backpack at home, or is it to take it to work knowing that somebody's going to look at it when I leave? And it's all throughout the declarations. They did it with clothes to go out with friends after work. They did it with laptops and iPads for homework or for watching movies. These were choices they had up front. And they knew if they made that choice, just like in Marillion, they'd be stuck on that bus. Just like in Overton, they'd have to park a mile away. Just as in El Cantar, they'd be subject to limitations when they drove the employer-provided vehicle home. They knew those were the consequences. They still made the choice. And that's why under Marillion, Overton, El Cantar, Watterson, Novoa, it can't be work because employees can't voluntarily choose to do something purely for their own benefit. Just benefits me, this is it. And then say, but you owe me money for it.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Time has expired. Ms. Sorry. You have some time remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think one way to frame the question, if the court decides to refer it to the Supreme Court, would be to say, does the wage order, in addition to mandating control, also have required as an additional element, and can conduct be deemed non-required simply because there's a pre-activity choice? That's really what the district court was holding, because there's no dispute, as Your Honor said, the employer required you to go through these bag checks. So that's a nuance, and that might be a helpful way to frame the question. I'd like to point out also that in Overton, footnote 6 says that the employees were not required to park in any particular lot, so there was no requirement whatsoever in Overton. I would also like to point out that the court is, Your Honor, is correct in your interpretation of Marillion. The Supreme Court simply did not address the specific issue that's raised in this case, and I think if the facts in Marillion had been different, for example, if the workers were required to clean farming implements during the bus
first legal principle stated is that commute time is in a company vehicle is presumed to be non-compensable. Then the court discussed Marillion, which is another commute time case, where the court went out of its way to make sure the opinion would be clear that an employer is not going to be responsible to pay for time just by providing a transportation. But if there were other controls exercised during the time, as there are in this case, I think the outcome of those decisions would have been different. And also in Alcantara, immediately after the court discussed Marillion, the court then stated this principle of law. In terms of commute time, the language says this employer would have to show that his commute time was both required and controlled. And the reason is that most of the time, commute time, general commute time, is not controlled. In Alcantara, the employees were allowed to sleep and read during the rides. There were very low levels of control during the ride.
Counsel, you have exceeded your time. If you would like one sentence to wrap up, you may.
My final sentence would be that the California Supreme Court has not squarely addressed this issue, and that the issue is right.